This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 5th of February, 1958. The title of this lecture is The Basic Approach to Clearing, Finding the Auditor. This tape is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. All right. Today we're going to talk again on a highly simple, fundamental thing in the field of auditing. We're going to talk about the basic approach to clearing, the most basics that we can talk about. And some fine day, you too will learn that it is twice as hard to be simple as it is to be complicated. And that these basic approaches are the thing which brings home the large angel food cakes. Don't bring home bacon, we're not making pigs. Bad joke. Now, talked yesterday about finding a pre-clear, right? And today, at least I'm going to begin with talking about finding the auditor. In the American Personality Analysis, and its British counterpart, the Oxford Capacity Analysis, you will find a graph. That will probably be standard for the next few hundred years, so you might as well get acquainted with it. It was carefully culled from all mental testing equipment. And it is the one which is found to tell not the best story. We ourselves invented one that tell a better story for limited purposes, but certainly one which best tells the state of case or gain or lack of it or retardation by reason of auditing. When I say we have a better test, we have a better test that says what shape a person is in when you first give it to him and the length of time he takes it and so on. And it's actually the old accident-prone test. And it's a killer. So if you must find out what a person is really like, this old accident-prone test, one sheet affair, both sides, gives you a good index point with which to analyze one of these APAs or OCAs. Now, one of these tests, of course, any of these tests can become null. An individual takes them time after time after time after time. He grades them, as the boys do around here, time after time after time. And then we look at the test to find out if he has any change. It's very amusing. One fellow was found to have an IQ of 2,000 or 3,000 or something of the sort, and suddenly was called to attention that he had spent the better part of a year and a half doing nothing but correcting the intelligence test, which had given him such a wonderful intelligence. Of course, he knew all of the answers by heart. So a test has a limitation. But giving this test once a week, week after week after week, you would think would null it. Not somebody who's studying it or is memorizing it, but just giving it week after week after week, every Saturday, every Saturday, every Saturday. Well, I have never found the test go null. And it even works on some of the people who sometimes correct them, which is quite a remarkable tribute. Now, this test has certain characteristics. And one of these characteristics that you should be very interested in one end of it, it says critical. On the below side, it says critical. And I don't care what it says on the upper side, but it ought to say havingness. See, as this critical point, the person becomes more and more critical on this graph, the result of the test, he actually is simply running out of havingness. And the test of it is that if you start feeding him trio, and he can do it, that you push almost singly and all by itself the critical button on up across the top of the line. Of course, that's hard to do without influencing some other buttons, but the main one that moves is critical. You see, there are certain processes today which more or less selectively move each one of these points. You could just set out to move one point, and you'd move one in a major fashion and the remainder in a minor fashion. Now, havingness and critical, it's quite remarkable. A person becomes critical when he can't strike. I'll give you an example. I remember one time in prep school, there were three boys on the football team, and they decided because I'd just come out to the football team that I ought to be properly chastised. So they slammed me from all three sides, and we got into an argument. That was an easy thing to do with a redhead. And we got back to the locker room, and we had a very surprising thing happen. One of them jumped me, and the other two grabbed me. And this one that jumped me wasn't wearing any clothes, therefore he was fairly easy to handle. And I simply accidentally threw him over my shoulder. You know, it's one of these things that you say, well, why can't all fights end this way instead of sitting here with two black eyes and a loose tooth? But he hit the concrete floor on his side with a terrible crash. And he gave the typical response to a final blow, which is, you shouldn't have done that. And all three in chorus started telling me, you shouldn't have done that. You see this? This is always the response. By the way, if you want to know whether or not somebody's licked at any time, I'm only telling you about a fight I won. The other 199,000 that I lost, I omit. But if you want to... if you want to find out whether or not somebody has received something he conceives to be a death blow, why, listen for this, you shouldn't have done that. They don't come back and fight you. They don't say what they're going to do to you. They merely tell you, you shouldn't have done that. And that is really the entering wedge of critical. You shouldn't have done that because it shouldn't be that way. In other words, the person is flinching. Flinching from what? He's flinching from mass, which has been used ferociously against him. And as long as he flinches from mass, he will not have. And so as he is invited again into the fray, he has to get used to mass. And if he gets used to mass and becomes so he isn't afraid of it anymore, his critical moves up. And therefore, we have this factor of havingness versus critical on this particular chart. You see how that works out? I could tell you similarly other things about other buttons, but this is one of the most positive buttons to move around. It's a very easy button to move around. And if you want to experiment with it sometime, why, you might take an APA graph, and you should be, whether you're auditing here at a central organization, in a field office, or on a private practice, or anything else, you should not be auditing without graphs, because believe me, you can sure fool yourself. With what happy optimism some auditor will come in and tell me, well, he feels much better. The graph is still hanging and an average of 70 points below the line all the way across, and it was the same way before the intensity. I can tell you what's going to happen. This individual that feels so much better is going to propitiate only in the direction of the auditor and is going out somewhere else and say he feels much worse. Both are a lie. He feels exactly the same. Now, I have tried to excuse these charts for their vagaries one time or another, but the better and more positive our auditing gets, the more reliance we can place on a chart or graph. And today, I have studied this very carefully, and the latest dope on it that I can give you is that if a graph drops, you fumbled. Now, there is the condition whereby the person is apparently very, very high tone, clear across the top of the graph, and not here, not any place, nowhere is everywhere sort of case. wide open case, and you audit them for a little while, and all of a sudden you find the graph falls out the bottom. It goes down before it goes up. But listen, it does it so rapidly in the 25 hours that the person is audited, if he's audited well, that you won't see it from Saturday to Saturday. When they fall off of that artificial high tone, they either blow out of your vicinity entirely because you figured they were high tone, you could do anything, you nut. They said, do you think I will get any better through auditing? And you say to them playfully, well, I don't know, you might die of heart failure, or might kill you dead, or might make you much worse, and the next thing you know, they blow session. Well, that's not the way a high profile operates, you see. Because a person who is totally sold on sweetness and light is probably quite sick and will answer it at the top of the graph, and the moment they start to get well, they'll fall clear to the bottom of the graph, so you might say the graph is a cylinder, not a two-plane graph. It goes off the top and onto the bottom on these very artificial cases. Now, a clear on this graph shows up along the top about a quarter of an inch from the top as the minimum response. After he settles out for 2 or 3 weeks, he usually moves the rest of the way to the top of the graph, and he almost exactly parallels the upper line of the graph. Interesting, isn't it? Makes one speculative about the tremendous genius of putting these graphs together. Actually, at optimum conduct, has evidently been recognized by man to be optimum conduct, and when you clear somebody, he can attain optimum conduct, and it is optimum conduct. That's a surprise. I'd be totally prepared to find it something else. Now, I'm talking about graphs here and the APA for one reason only, and merely to show you the positiveness of the material, because I've been sneaking up on you this whole time. Up here, as you hold one of these graphs, up here in the upper left-hand corner, there are the first three down buttons. I don't care what those buttons say. The third one from the top is nervous and dispersed. If those buttons remain low and on the bottom, the pre-clear has not found the auditor. Boy, that sticks out with the sorest thumb you ever saw bandaged up. I won't give you a lot of words to memorize. I'll just give you a spatial relationship to remember. As you face the graph, and it's right side up, you look up there at the upper left-hand three buttons. The third one is the most important and hangs up the worst, nervous and dispersed, and is the one which gives us the clue to all this. But when those things continue low, any or all of them, the pre-clear has not found the auditor. I don't care how many auditing hours were invested. I don't care how smart the logic was behind the auditing. I don't care how cleverly the pre-clear was inveigled into or pushed out of session. There is no rationale sweeps aside this point. Now, I'm telling you what I use in handling staff auditors. You know, I have to look at an awful lot of these graphs every Saturday. They come in from England. They're here. I get them from California. There are lots of them. Tons and tons of pre-clears. And whenever we get somebody who was recently on HCA, and the director of processing in an incautious moment pulled him in and put him on a paying pre-clear, happens now and then, without first breaking him in some other way, because sometimes emergencies overwhelm the director of processing. And this person is quite weak. You get a pre-clear who is lying on the bottom, up here, on these upper left, three buttons, still lying on the bottom. At the end of 25 hours, at the end of 50 hours, at the end of 75 hours, the end of 125 hours, he's still lying on the bottom. Now, it's important to know why that pre-clear is now getting into a state of decay. Very important to know that. He just hasn't found the auditor. That's all. I mean, it's so stupidly simple. Here's the clue. Here's the rationale. Pre-clear, who is nervous and dispersed, has no stable data. And Scientology is not going to operate to him as a stable datum in an auditing session. An auditor is. I keep trying to tell auditors this, that it's the auditor who operates as the stable datum, not the process. You can be very brilliant about the whole thing. The processes can be fantastically wonderful, and we know that it would not be possible to clear anybody without them. But believe me, something else comes before the processes, and that's the auditor. And where an individual continues to be nervous and dispersed, he is simply saying that he has not found a stable datum. And the first stable datum which he must find to get benefit out of auditing is, of course, the auditor, because otherwise he won't know he's in session. This is one of these horrible stupidities. And yet everybody overlooks it. We could say there is no car in the driveway because there is no car in the driveway. Simple. And all the auditors in the business could look at me and say, yes, that's so true. There's no car in the driveway. There's no car in the driveway. Tra-la, 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 and go off and do something else. But I mean it. The pre-clear has got a car in the driveway with no car in the driveway. Well, admittedly, he's crazy. But your business is to get him over it. And the first little hump you cross, please believe me, the first little hump you cross is not impressing him with whether or not he can get well or get sick or anything else. The first thing that you cross has nothing to do at all with the cleverness of the process or what is wrong with the pre-clear. We don't care until we get this point over. Has he found the auditor? I'll tell you how important the process is. That gives 22% cure, broadly. And that is all. That is it. That is the process which gives this mysterious 22% cure. Josie Ann has a swelling on her epiglottis. Somebody says, you ought to see a doctor. She goes down, place full of iodoform, human skulls. Very impressive. Full of prescription blanks, Abbott, Park Davis, Lilly, preparations. The nurse there looks all very shiny and orderly, just like TV has applause and laughter machines going so as to beef up the program. Why, doctors have scream machines going, you know, to impress the patients. Josie Ann walks in. She said, I've got a swelling on my epiglottis. Epiglottis, the doctor knows what the epiglottis is. For heaven's sakes, he learned it. It's a Latin word. There are 5 books have been written about it. He knows all about it. He's never looked at one. But he certainly has got nomenclature. He's syllable happy. He jumps from syllables to knives. He probably ought to leave them both alone. The point is, Josie Ann says, "There's the swelling on my upper glottis." Doc says, "Take this 3 times a day, tastes terrible, make you sweat, you're liable to get nauseated, and it'll all go away." So she goes home and she does it, and the swelling goes away. She found a doctor, Stable Datum. Bill Zilch walks in. He said, "I got a swelling on my upper glottis." Doctor gives him penicillin, microcillin, oreocillin, AMA-cillin, Abbott-cillin, Park-Davis-cillin. He gives him rubs, massages, diathermy, pyothermy. Warns him not to go to chiropractors, warns him not to go to anybody else, says Dianetics is now a province of the medical profession. By the way, I've gotten that report from 5 doctors in the last few months. They told their patients that they mustn't get anything but medical doctors practicing Dianetics on them because Dianetics was part of the medical profession. It's evidently true. It's come from too many quarters. They don't know what they're wrapped up with. Someday a Dianeticist will walk in and say, "Can you say it's a boy?" The doctor says, "Yes, I can say that." And the Dianeticist will say, "Well, start saying it." Doctor won't ever know what's hit him. Yeah, he belongs to Dianetics, all right. Anyhow, Zilch gets operated on. Go on. And it just never happens. Nothing ever happens to the swelling on his epiglottis except run down his bank account and run up his anxiety. This guy's Stable Datum was a swelling in the epiglottis, and he never got a Stable Datum out of the doctor is there. Got it? The old witch doctor was pretty smart. He knew his there-ness. He knew it much better than the modern medico. Gourd rattles, shark's teeth, puffs of smoke that flashed up in the fire. Down in Africa, horsetail switches full of fleas. Horrible masks. The mask, the witch doctor mask with the horns and so forth has degenerated these days down to a white gauze. Same purpose. The old witch doctor worked on a high velocity there-ness. Brother, when you call the witch doctor over to your hut, you knew when he arrived. It's interesting that the American Indian, in handling witch doctory, shamanism, he is, by the way, the American Indian shaman was a direct descendant, of course, from the Mongolian shaman. And you still see shamanism practiced exactly as the American Indian practiced it along the Amur River, the Goldie peoples at this moment are practicing exactly the same shamanism as was imported into America by the Indians when they came across the Bering. And those boys are very good at this one point. Excellent. They train themselves in acrobatics, amongst other things. For a white man to sit around and watch this sort of thing, it becomes incredible to him, and he says, finally says, I'm not looking at what I am looking at. And he goes off someplace and writes some book about it saying it didn't happen. It's the very easiest thing he can do, you know. Makes nothing out of the whole works, because boy, did it make nothing out of him. I've seen one of these guys do a front flip across a fire and a back flip up on top of the lodge poles of the tent. They disappear from where they are alongside of the fire and appear on top of the tent. I don't know how they do it. He just don't believe it. All of a sudden, he's on top of the tent, and furthermore, he's wearing a Thunderbird mask, what they began to call it, any kind of a beaked crow head or something of this sort, with a message from the gods, you see, about all the hot dope concerning this particular illness, you see. It's the same man. He was standing alongside the fire a moment ago, and you're not quite sure where he went or how he did it, but he's up there. He chatters out in some insane jargon. The next thing you know, why, this crow-headed beast disappears, and the same guy appears alongside of the fire where he was originally. And he says, I heard that. The patient sure knows he's got an auditor. Now, I don't advocate Japanese acrobatics, shamanism, or horrible masks. Although, if we did wear masks, we could go into a boil-off less detectably. People sooner or later will start wearing the E-meter as a sort of a mask. You wait and see. And then eventually somebody will paint a face on the other side of it. I can just see all this happening. Maybe that's how the medicine man got there, and after a while he forgot what the meter was for. Thought the mask was the thing. Well, let's find the auditor actually accounts for all of the basic healing that has been done up to this time. Medical doctors are a little worse off than some of these more civilized tribes, such as the Aborigine of Australia, the Igorote of the Philippines, and other more cultured peoples. Because none of these peoples stick knives into their victims to convince them they're there. They have more respect for their clientele. But if a medico gets too anxious, he becomes very, very anxious about his presence, becomes very, very anxious in production of an effect, doubting very much that he can produce an effect, gets very low on the cause and effect scale, why, he actually will put on white gowns and a mask and dance around, I think it's a white table, isn't it, with a sacrificial maiden lying upon the table, and impress her that he's there with a knife. I don't know what other use there would be for surgery. Unless, of course, it'd be removing foreign bodies from the body. I can see that particular use for surgery. But there is a whole school of surgery called bloodless surgery, which does that anyhow. It exists right here in the U.S. It's never gotten any place. Because the surgery in itself is not a thing. The surgery in itself is simply another method of convincing the patient and the patient's relatives. He's there. The doctor used to tell about one of his fellow practitioners. And the fellow specialized in appendectomies. And he'd go down and he'd do an appendectomy just about as fast as you'd snap your fingers. You know, he'd go down, he'd do this appendectomy, he'd take the appendix out. You see, bang. And then he'd smear blood all over his cap and gown, and he'd take a syringe and fill the appendix that he had removed, you see, up with air and bloody water, and then in this horrible guise rush into where the relatives were waiting, saying, see, I got there in the nick of time. would have broken in another minute.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
Well, anyway, if we have this much background, and I think if you study it up yourself, you will find there's this much background. If we have this much background to find the auditor, I think that you might be well advised to use some of it yourself. Not that you have to put on much of a show. Not that you have to distract the preclear, create a terrible effect upon the preclear. But you could, sometime in the future, get so anxious about producing an effect on the preclear and getting him to find an auditor that you would do silly things like appearing on the lodge pole of the tent with a crow's mask on, you know? See? The CCHs give us the answer to this, by the way. CCH3 and CCH4, which are hand space mimicry and book mimicry, are directly find the auditor mechanisms. There's a great deal of technology associated with this. There's the reality scale, which begins with nothing, opens up a little higher into communication line. Communication line begins to have terminals. Then the terminals become more real than the communication line. The communication line drops out. We go upstairs a little higher, upscale a little higher, and the terminals drop out, and we get an agreement, and we go upstairs above agreement, and we get into the realm of postulates. And that is the reality scale. So, of course, if we open up on the preclear with a communication line, not terminals, we're more successful. And he watches our arms, our hands, and we push him upscale by making less and less of a line and calling more and more attention to the terminal, and we simply approximate this exact pattern, and the next thing you know, why, he has found an auditor. We approximate that reality scale. It's quite an interesting mechanism. This has been gone over considerably in an earlier ACC. We have a lot of tapes and technology on this. It's quite important, even though it's not mentioned very often. The reality scale is quite amusing. The line, for instance, becomes much more important than the terminal. In government, let us say, the paper chain itself, the messengers can eventually be expected to inherit the empire. They're the particles traveling on the line, and people will watch these lines, and they become more and more important. The people who are occupying the posts and terminals at the end of the line will become less and less important, will disappear. Quite amazing. In other words, the paperwork can be more important than the action or the ship or the company, don't you see? You get more and more emphasis on the line, and pretty soon the line too disappears, and then you've lost the works. Well, what's happened to the preclear? The preclear cannot face mass. Now, I told you about this critical case. The preclear can't face mass. What is mass? Mass is something that knocks hell out of him. Definition, from his viewpoint. If he cannot face mass, then of course he cannot have. If he cannot have, then of course he is critical. Highly critical. As unpalatable as we find that particular definition of critical, it's merely a working definition of critical, but it does follow through. And as he becomes more critical, that is to say, as he gets down the line and is unable to have, of course, he finds it more and more difficult to find a stable datum, because at length, even thoughts apparently have mass, as the Russian is in that position right now, thoughts are mass sort of thing, you know. The medical profession is in that position. The word is the object. He has deified structure to a point where he says structure exceeds function. I don't know. If I had a piece of metal out here in the end of a boat that wasn't there for anything, well, so what? You see, that just doesn't go anyplace. But if I had an outboard motor on the end of a boat, which had the function of pushing the boat, I'd take some care of it. But this piece of metal, I'm liable to just totally neglect. In other words, function does monitor structure, even visibly here in the society. The function of a car is to run. A car that doesn't run winds up in the junk heap. We don't have any more to do with it. Its function monitored its continuance. And yet they think in a human being this whole thing is flipped, and that the human being's mind or thought or functioningness is monitored by his body. The laws that apply to automobiles do not apply to human beings, in other words. The laws that apply everywhere in the world to everything and all of man's works as we observe them no longer applies to man. It doesn't seem to me reasonable. In a man, function monitors structure, and thought monitors function. We just go up a little higher. Then we enter into games, condition, purposes, various things of this character. Well, now as the individual sits there and faces the auditor, he is actually being asked to face a function rather than a mass at first. It's quite interesting, but because the auditor has planted some mass there, he cannot face the mass, the preclear cannot face the mass, and therefore does not face the auditor's function. Now, there are probably 10,862 and a half ways of getting over this point. But if you don't know that it's there and don't know that it's a point, you won't bother to dispose of it. And yet it is what holds up the whole of processing. I only know two things that suspend processing utterly. I only know two things which, if omitted, will totally wreck the works. Other things, one by one, can be omitted, skimped, forgotten about, and we still get something done. But these two things must never be omitted. And one of these things is, of course, find the auditor. The other one's the PT problem. If we omit to clear a present time problem, the auditor has a preclear who thinks he should be elsewhere, doing something else, which is, of course, impulsive and dispersed, right? So running a PT problem is in the interest of getting the preclear back into the session, isn't it? Well, similarly, finding the auditor is a function in the direction of getting the PC into session too. But the PT problem cleared may or may not be therapeutic, but the auditor found at once becomes therapeutic, sweepingly and overwhelmingly, because it's the beginning of a third dynamic for the preclear. It's a big gain. Actually, a preclear probably goes right on through to the end of his intensity, finding the auditor. But some edge has to begin it. There must be some start for this. And without a start, it never gets anywhere. It is not something that takes place automatically. And if you put it on automatic every time you audit a preclear, every session, you're sooner or later going to come to grief with the preclear, that's all. So as we look up the line, we find, amazingly enough, that everything aside, and theory aside, and everything else aside, we find the ages support us, we find tremendous material here for confirmation of this fact, and we discover that the auditor comes first as a discovery point for the preclear. Now, it isn't for just this reason that an auditor is always senior to a preclear. Not for just this reason. He's actually data senior, and he's capability senior, too. But the session can't even go on without an auditor. I mean, why sit there for 895 hours? If you don't start this thing happening, it'll never happen. Now, the communication formula supports many things. It supports ARC and it supports all sorts of things. Your drills, TR 0 to 10, all of these drills, comm course and upper indoc drills, simply smooth out the communication. And all of these things are supportive to the existence of an auditor. Aren't they? And they make a session continue to run smoothly. They continue it in a third dynamic activity. They do a lot of other things, but they for sure keep the auditor found, don't they? And don't think you aren't actually entered a little bit into the days of the witch doctor, with a gourd rattle, because a lot of preachers will not be able to figure out how you can go on being so nice, polite, keeping a comfortable, easy posture, keeping yourself in a cheerful state of mind with regard to them, and going on being efficient, being effective, and they're screaming and howling and being critical and all this sort of thing. And even old preclairs or old auditors being audited will sometimes be rather amazed. They were chopping hell out of you during the session sometime or another, and they wind up the session being a little bit overwhelmed by the idea that you took it so calmly, and the wonder, well, I'm very sorry, didn't I upset you? They're trying to upset this. See? No, they didn't upset a good auditor. A good auditor knows his business. It is a rather inspiring, awe-inspiring discipline to a preclear. He couldn't do it, unless he's another professional auditor being audited. He could not do it. That is all. Although we can, with these drills, they're so carefully developed and isolated and so on, we can take these on a gradient scale and aided and abetted with auditing, why an auditor can get there, and he can do these things, and it doesn't tear his head off. As a matter of fact, he usually, eventually, finds it easier to do than to run a sloppy session. That's kind of rough. That's something he'd say, well, now, how would you go about running a sloppy session? Because it's too easy to do it simply. But it's impressive. That's all I'm getting around to. And you probably never looked at it before as very impressive. It is. Anytime you start to slop around and say, well, are you sure it's all right with me if we end the session? I mean, you're sure it's all right with you if we do this? I mean, it's all right, isn't it? Isn't it? Huh? Exercising good control, you know. You can do something like that, and you can cost the preclear his stable datum in the session, which is the auditor, and he'll come downscale again. You watch him. Watch that tone handle go down after you've pulled a blunder. You know the fastest reducer of tone in a session? You watch the E meter. Lose the auditor. The auditor says, in front of that body, mock up an allohypodile and keep it from going away. Did you? Thank you. In front of that body, mock up an allohypodile and keep it from going away. Did you? Thank you. In front, in back of that body. I made a little mistake. You don't mind, do you? And so on. Watch that needle. Watch that tone arm. Made a mistake. Preclear had him all set up as being somebody seated on the left-hand god and totally impervious and able to barge through even the preclear's engrams. The preclear's impressed the fact that his engrams are really beepy. And all of a sudden, the auditor made a mistake. He said the same command twice and then only then found out about it. He's in the same position with regard to the body. He upset the whole routine and so forth. You watch that tone handle come down. Or the auditor turns around and attacks the preclear rather than the preclear's apparition. Then you really see that thing drop. Now, I've seen a tone arm go from straight up to 8 o'clock. 12 o'clock down to 8 o'clock, just on one fancied invalidation. Fancied. Didn't even exist. Well, if that is the most potent way to reduce somebody's tone, don't you suppose there's a possibility that's the most potent way to improve somebody's tone? Only, of course, you were all raised in America and you have to wipe yourself out and be socially polite in order to live in this country. You must not stand up and say, I am, at any time. Not done. England, you can stand up any time you want to and say you are if you use the proper social forms for doing so. You can say, I'm awfully sorry, fellows, but you know I am, you know. And they'll say, quite. You can do it. You can get away with it. You can't over here. You raise your little finger and whop! Off goes your head. It's a country which isn't... very far out of a frontier state, and its manners sometimes reflect it. Now, no great criticism of America. It has to be factual. sudden and savage with regard to the individual. America's just hand in glove with this cult of the personality thing. I don't think America's ever had a hero she didn't kill. I don't care who it was. They killed him sooner or later. You know, they teach little kids in school about this horrible beast, Benedict Arnold. You should see what one of his contemporaries wrote about him. Not in defense of Benedict Arnold. It happens to be the only real, authentic life of George Washington we have. It was written by Washington Irving. And you want to see in those four volumes what he says about Benedict Arnold. Boy, we would have been a gone dog if Benedict Arnold hadn't been a general in some of the earlier battles that were fought in the American Revolution. It's interesting, by the way, in looking that over, that you can see in that history an engram. He was wounded. This man was wounded and was pursued all during a battle he was attempting to fight in order to court-martial him. And as soon as he had won the battle, a court-martial was convened. All of this under the duress of wounds and exhaustion. It's very, very fascinating. I mean, the Washington Irving's history there gives us the total engram. Oh, I'm not saying this gives anybody an opportunity to do so. I'm not condoning any action Benedict Arnold ever made. But I will say that it's rather interesting the career the man led, the brilliance of his career, and he has met at every turn with more confounded nonsense you can shake a stick at. He was just fascinatingly nagged. When he got out of this battle, which was the battle which kept the British forces from joining and so overwhelming New England and so on, Saratoga, when he finally won this battle, he was, as I say, court-martialed, came down to Philadelphia and tried to collect his accounts. Generals in those days paid their troops and then got paid back, and nobody would pass on his accounts. He was being dogged by creditors. He was still sick. He couldn't walk. You get the idea. And all of this chain of engrams finally resulted in him going back to the British, to whom he had been a turncoat. Everybody forgets that one. And he sold out. He didn't even make the grade. He wasn't even a good trainer. He was a good general, but a very bad trainer. All right. Now, here is a case of somebody losing a stable datum. He evidently thought he was fighting for something, but this something was not well established or long continued. And when it wiped out, why, he simply reverted to the earlier stable datum, which was the British Crown, which is quite interesting. All right. Now, an auditor, in handling a preclear, actually finds the preclear terrifically eager to give him cooperation and loyalty. The preclear, you understand? Not the aberrated bank and so forth. This is a new hope. And if he then is led directly to finding that hope, and if that hope, the auditor, by his conduct and actions, then continues to sustain that gain, you get a very fast run. Rapid. As long as find the auditor has been successfully accomplished and is increased and improved all the way through the intensive. But if we get it up here just so high and we build the person's hopes very high and then we drop the ashtray and let the E-meter fall on top of it, Preclear conceives out of this we're striking at him or something. If we start to invalidate his data, disobey the auditor's code one way or the other, chop him up, all of a sudden, his gain is slowed down. As far as I could tell, this is the basic monitoring factor on boil-off. Preclear's only boil-off as long as something is dimmed down on an auditor. I've tested this, by the way, and I found out I could keep a preclear awake by making him find the auditor. I could keep him alert and keep him rising in tone without boiling off as long as I kept the auditor in sight. Did I do something wrong is simply one trick of a thousand. Preakler starts to dope off. Well, there's some breakdown in ARC. Something has happened there. Did I do something wrong? You sure I didn't do something wrong 4 or 5 minutes ago? Get him to search the track around there. All of a sudden he says, you just haven't said thank you for the last 20 commands. You have, but he didn't hear them. And you didn't punch the acknowledgement in. Now, after we look all of this over, and after we view this fact that in America particularly, we mustn't assert ourselves, we get Indian arrows through the skull or congressional bills in the hip pocket, something happens. We particularly here have a little bridge to cross, but we sure as the devil better cross. You go on being socially evasive, effacing yourself as you do socially in an auditing session, and you'll be one of these 275-hour average clearing auditors. Right? That doesn't mean you got to jump down the pre-clear's throat, because that's just overemphasis in the other direction. Until you're willing to be an auditor and act as forcefully and directly as an auditor should, then there's no auditor there to find. And withdrawing from, flinching away from the session, not taking total responsibility for what's going on in that session, thinking we now have to talk quietly because we might disturb the pre-clear, we just cost him an auditor, and I've already told you that's the deepest dive on the needle, on an e-meter. If you don't believe me and you got a little time sometime, not in this unit, but you got a little time sometime along the line, try it. Try it. Pre-clear's getting along fine, tone's rising very nicely. Just say to him, you know, looking at this meter, I realize that all of this junk you've been handing me is totally fraudulent. I've been sitting here laughing at you for hours. If you can get him back in the session, you might be able to get him on the bottom of the meter, providing it's a new meter and has a lower range. Now, it's an odd thing that your skill actually includes a total patch-up of just that. Interesting, isn't it? So we get down to this horrible fundamental. A horrible fundamental, the like of which one never heard of. The training drills won't do it for you. They only make it possible for you to familiarize yourself with doing it to a point where you can do it. And after that, you're doing it. Scientology didn't build a thetan that is auditing the pre-clear. It did not build you. You are admittedly, considerably aided and abetted. And you possibly would not be able to do what you're doing without Scientology, but that does not wipe out you. You get the idea? An auditor is always senior to a pattern or organization of thought. He better had continued to be. And he's always senior to a bricklayer. And he certainly better be. And he is always senior to a clear. Of course, you get a cleared auditor. You got somebody, you got a cross between a werewolf and a tiger. But that's beside the point. You could take a dead in his head Black Five auditor who could do a good job of auditing. He'd still be senior to a clear. Don't think he wouldn't be. So the importance of the auditor is something that mustn't particularly be pumped up with a bicycle pump or something of the sort. It requires a certain poise in you, a certain willingness to be. It requires a lot of things that you could blame it on. But the point is that if you're not there to be found, no auditing takes place. And actually, I practically in its totality have talked to you about control just now in this last hour. And that's it. Control is only an assurance of the senior, of the auditor to the session. That's all it is. Has a lot of mechanics, and there's lots of reasons and rationale and so forth. But the point is, it continues to make the pre-clear thoroughly aware of the fact that he has an auditor, which gives him a stable datum. And if he has a stable datum, he will rise. Now, you are aware of the fact, of course, that a stable datum and a confusion are the two anatomies of energy pattern. That is to say, there are these two things in an energy pattern. I make a better statement on that. The total anatomy of any energy pattern is made up of stable data, stable particles, stable masses, or confused particles, confused masses, or both. But when you have both, it takes, not only takes a stable datum to orient a confusion. Funny part of it is the stable datum and its very existence is necessary to see the confusion. Confusions only settle out as themselves in the presence of a stable datum. This is so sweepingly important in the field of energy masses that an auditor, by going to the door and seeing who is there, doorbell rang during the session, he went to the door to see who was there, all of a sudden the pre-clear field goes into motion the moment he goes over to the door. Why? He's a little bit too far away to be a stable datum. Pre-clear knows he isn't a stable datum. That's why he's there. He's trying to arrive at the point of stable datum. You see that? So after you found the pre-clear, you've got to have an auditor there for him to find. And if that auditor doesn't continue to be an auditor, doesn't continue to control a session, which is just another method of being there, doesn't get the pre-clear totally apprised of existence, those cases which lie on the upper left bottom of the graph, particularly nervous and dispersed, will continue to lie there for the next 5,000 hours of auditing until somebody comes along and says, I'm the auditor. Immediately they say, well, what do you know? And begin to improve. You understand me? I'm not trying to glorify the auditor. All we're trying to do is get some auditing done. But you're my friends. You'll